Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Catherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the next episode of The Family Express with Catherine and Rhonda. Our guest speaker today is Nancy Aiken out of Northern California. Nancy, we're so glad to have you here, and you're going to help us with your specialty, I'm hearing, EFFT with teens, EFFT with adult children and their families. And I think that might be a good place for us to start. And first off, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for being here.
Hi, and glad to be here.
Great. Thank you so much. And can we just maybe have you start with telling us how EFFT with teens versus EFFT with adult children is different? Could we start there?
Well, I think that we came into this with the homey type family program. So it is EFFT. It is the therapy, but it's in a more educationally enriched setting, like the homey type for couples. So I just want to say that. And in that setting, we've learned a lot because we meet with quite a few. We have groups. So there's group of teens and a group of parents of teens. And it's very effective because it normalizes things for the participants in a huge way. It's very moving that way. But teens are, altered. And they're altered as adolescents, you know, they move into this place. In fact, we had a very cool thing happen. I taught how to facilitate the parent and teen workshop 2 weeks ago. And I had a teen that came when she was a teen that was now 24 to talk to the people about how it was for her to be in that workshop. Cause I have contact with her now at 24 and her parents. And teens are mad when they come. Teens do not feel like they want to, I'm making all these generalizations, but I think it's normal that teens are moving toward themselves, their identities, and their peers outside the family. They're questioning. They start to question the family rituals. They're attracted to novelty, to growth outside the family, which is completely understandable, and I think very true. I mean, there's always exceptions, but for the most part, peers become the magnet and the parents are worried about what's going to happen. They're going to be influenced. They're going to have a lot of things happen in their lives, but they don't want to talk to parents. Teens tend not to want to talk to parents. They want to talk to their peers. They want to come home and close the door to their room. They are in a lot of excitement and a lot of turmoil, and they need their parents. So what I found with teens, and again, I know I'm making generalizations, and between 13 and 19, there's a huge spread. But in general, teens said to me over and over again, I want my parents to know me and understand me and accept me, but they don't want to talk to their parents. So I would say, well, how can they know you and understand you and accept you if you don't let them know what's going on? And they'd stop and go, I don't know. I just want them to, you know, like they couldn't see the paradox, but they really did need their parents. They needed their parents to trust them, to stay steady, to not start to move into either a more controlling stance, asking a lot more questions because they're scared parents. So they start to want more information right at a time when the teen is wanting more autonomy. So that's a negative cycle, or they just back away. I don't know what to do. I'm going to let the school handle it. I'm just going to kind of close my eyes and trust, because every time I try to engage, I get them all. And then kids are going, they're not here for me, even though. So there's a paradox that everybody, I think, needs to understand. The feelings underneath this very normal, hold me tight, let me go, which is a theme, I think, that covers teens and their parents quite graphically. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely, Nancy. So you're saying, like, in those teen years, there's this launching that starts to happen pretty early and then continues. That's a really hard thing for a lot of parents to navigate, and it impacts the relationship between the teen and the parent. And then how does that catapult forward, I suppose, into the adult-parent relationship?
Right. Well, when we wrote about adult children and their parents, Anne Masu, as another layer of this program, we thought it would be easier because they're older, right? They're more mature. Adult children are often past 25 or so. Their frontal cortex is finally developed, right? We just assumed that they could talk more with more, less reactivity and a little bit more perspective. Okay. And we were wrong. We were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a huge thing. Let me say it this way. We weren't totally wrong. I mean, of course, they can step out. They've been in the world some. But that they're still kids, no matter how old they are. That's one of the biggest lived experiences we've had in working with families with adult children. So adult children don't recognize, again, generalizations, but often that they still need a kind of unconditional support from their parents because they are very focused on being in the world for the most part. You know, you've got this phenomenon now of failure to launch or having to come home after college for economic reasons. It's getting harder to be out there in the world. But adult children want to see themselves as independent and separate. But they still get really hurt and really confused when they get disapproval from their parents or get So we were surprised at how reactive adult children, how young we still are.
That's so interesting, Nance. I just want to metabolize this for a moment because you're saying that even though adult children might be out there, maybe even living away from home or using home as a base, they have massive needs. Like they're making their way in the world in terms of their identity, their mark on life. And so in many ways, they still need a lot because they're making such big leaps, right? Mm-hmm. And that sort of surprised you.
Well, yes. And yes, exactly. But also it's wired in to keep needing your parents to be the stronger, wiser other. In some ways, it's not even that situational, although it gets cloudy because I'm on my own. You don't have to tell me who I'm going to date, except for I really want you to like who I picked, and you don't. So now we're in a crisis, right? And then they don't see themselves as much as their parents, right? The parents are too critical, they won't let go, or they don't care. Or they're really angry that I've chosen, you know, a different path, which actually can happen. But there is the attachment system doesn't change in a basic way. They still want a kind of safe haven and a secure base. And they get very upset when that's not given. And on the parents' point of view, it's even harder because parents are trying to struggle with letting go. We have this need to protect and nurture.
Yeah.
And we don't grow out of that need just because we're 40 or 50 or 60 or even 70, right?
Yeah. So now let me see if I'm getting the visualization in my brain. So the parents are pretty clingy. Like we want those kids to miss them. We want moments with them because we miss them so much. And the adult kids, though, they just want confidence. They want your confidence, you kind of giving them an attaboy, right? And not too much advice unless they really ask for it.
Perfect. Exactly. And then the other side of the coin, which again, I see this as normal, which is maybe why you think I'm empathetic. I really just do, because the other side of the coin is parents are like, I'm done. I want to be off the hook. I'm not missing you that much, frankly. I'm sort of like, finally my turn. Like, we are going to sell the house and move into like a condo. And maybe me and my partner are going to maybe travel. You know, we never got to do that. We got, you know, maybe we had children young. And the kids are like, sell the house. What about my room? I mean, they haven't been in their room in 20 years, but it's their room,
a little house.
Or they'll say,
huh.
And this is even more difficult with a lot of feelings. You have grandchildren now. What do you mean you're going to move away?
Yeah.
Don't you want to be with the grandkids?
What?
And I need your help with the grandkids.
Sure, Nancy. I mean, that's a wide spectrum of the parental responses to launching and living their own lives. I mean, do you have any opinion on which parents are like, come back home and lean on me for as long as possible versus the parents that are saying, oh, I'm looking forward to some space for myself? Do you have any theories about that?
I don't know what correlates with those strategies. We can all guess. I think the most important thing, and maybe that's why you think I'm empathetic. You are incredibly empathetic, Catherine. But just so much so. But is that they all make sense. It makes sense. Like, I want my kids around, even though I'm ambivalent. I am ambivalent, right? I start to, I miss them, but then I start to enjoy myself a little. And then they say, I'm coming. And actually, I'll stay the weekend. And I'm a little like, wow, okay. I mean, you know, like, I'll say yes, but I'm like, I was just planning on, you know, driving to the cabin with my husband. That would have been a nice day. I'm probably not going to do that now. It's not without ambivalence.
Okay.
But I do think that I want the connection. And this isn't, I don't mean to get into gender roles. All I'm telling you is, in our experience and my experience personally, I would always say, let's open the door to the kids, no matter how old they are. And my husband, not so much. He will follow my lead.
Mm-hmm.
And he really loves the children, but he gets tired. He's looking forward. Like, when they left the house, he was thrilled.
So, like, even in your family, you had two parents and each of you were slightly different. You were more like, hey, let's have more time with them. And he was a little bit more like, hey, let's get us some of our own time. So they
exactly. Okay. And then the kids respond to each parent in different ways, which is normal also, because attachment is dyadic. So how, and then part of what we try to help people understand, well, it's definitely in the program, but in therapy too, is that none of this makes you a bad person. And you do feel differently with one parent than the other. And parents can sometimes feel differently about one kid than the other. And this idea that everything's always equal and everybody loves everybody exactly the same way and exactly the same amount is just not reality.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean you're not loved. It just means that you're loved in different ways because you're presenting different challenges.
Thank you for saying that, Nancy. That's just so true and sobering and amazing. Yeah.
It is sobering, Catherine. I think part of being a parent to an adult kid is kind of continual loss, continual grief. Yes, you get the enrichment of more family if you get along and grandchildren that are adorable.
Yeah.
It's really warm, but there's a lot of grief that comes from the differences, the moving away, the different choices people make.
You know what, my friend? My son is about to turn 16, and he's been making this journey away from me for a couple months. And it's been fascinating and sad. Like, I noticed that he's all about my husband. Like, even say goodnight to my husband and forget to say goodnight to me, or leave school, forget to say goodbye to me. And I'm I just see the difference, and I'm just trying to say, you know what? He's pushing me away so that he can become his own person.
Right.
Trying to really understand what it means developmentally and give him that space.
Right.
Then then occasionally, like yesterday, he just comes and sat on my lap. And I just hold him, and I just try to say, this could be the last time this ever happens, so enjoy the moment, right? But it's a very weird feeling as a parent to have carried and nurtured and breastfed that kid, and then to think that he's going to have his own family, and it's not going to be about...
Like, you're really feeling it. You're really starting to feel it.
Yeah, it's happening for sure.
And Catherine, you are open, see, so that sometimes that pain gets hard. Like, you didn't say goodbye to me, and now you want to sit on my lap? No, thanks. I mean, parents put up walls because they don't
understand it, right? Or
they don't want to feel rejected. They're protecting themselves. These are the things to, I think we'd all have empathy for that parent. I do.
You've heard me say it before, and I'm going to say it again on the air for the record. I have never known someone to be as empathic as you, Nancy. Even where my empathy has failed for parents, I've seen you go and pull those parents out of, you just find compassion. How have you developed this? And maybe even give us an example of like the toughest parent you've had to work with or...
Well, it's hard to do that, the toughest one. But I do feel like my own pain of working with learning how to be a good mom has been very, very tough. It's been very tough personally for me. I think of all the things I've done in my life, I have an incredibly secure marriage of 50 years. We worked on it, but we did it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, hard work to get there.
And I've been successful professionally, thank God. I did well. But as a mom, no confidence. Very, very little confidence. I'm sure it's very much how I was raised, with a mom that didn't feel confident in her own life. And so there was not a lot of connection, actually, between me and my mom. And so I think my own pain is what helps me understand people, because I've worked really, really hard, and I continue at 73 to work really hard at trying to live the stuff we learn. And if I'm having so much trouble, and I'm a good person, you know, they're good people too.
Yeah.
Like, no one wants to screw up being a parent.
Yeah.
And when you start to feel like you have no idea what to do, I've been there so many times that I can just say I know how that feels, and I really do. And people share their dread of being a parent. People share, I don't know what to do now. I really don't know what to do now. I would say, you know, we just had the workshop, and all the parents that were there were very different, you know, socioeconomically, and they actually lived in different parts of the country because it's online, but they all felt inadequate in moments. Like, I thought we'd be done. That's the other thing. I thought we'd be friends now. And you'd forgive me for what I didn't know how to do. And I can stop feeling inadequate. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by grief, you know, like,
yeah.
So when the adult, like, there's the one fellow who, he's not the hardest parent, but, I think there's a general theme that parents want to be understood as well. So this one physician, extremely, you know, successful. He had four different practices around. He'd live in a different state. And his son, who was also a dentist, he kept telling his father that he said, you have attachment problems. I don't feel close to you. And this father did everything he could to make enough money, because he grew up poor, to make sure he gave his kids what he didn't have.
Mm.
And he could not hear it. He didn't have any idea. What do you mean? I don't have attachment problems. I love you. I'm giving you all this support. And he's like, I do want the money. I mean, he said, you know, I appreciate what you give me. He helped him with the house or something. But I'm talking about being close. And this father could not, his view of himself had no room to let this perception in.
Yeah.
I worked with them. I made a little bit of a dip, and I just got a text this morning. I'll tell you, because this is real. You know, this is real. The guy said to me that the son said, of course, no names. Thank you a lot, Nancy. I was feeling pretty defeated until that last breakout room. It seemed like I didn't matter how many times I would say and point out, correcting my misunderstanding or clarifying my selective hearing was not helpful, was blocking communication and damaging trust. I was just told I was the angry, resentful kid to ruin his life. I appreciate your intervention to finally just listen. So that's what I, you know, helped dad do. I said, look, I get it. You've done everything. You have nowhere to put this. It's going to be the hardest thing. I said something like, your father is in a realm that he's never been in before. He's in charge when he goes to work. And now you're telling him something that he has no way to understand. It's going to take some time. It's just going to take some time. Now, I think you would feel the exact same way I do. I mean, the guy, the father was pretty defensive and sort of clueless, but
yeah,
it was just, he was completely like a fish out of water.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking, Nancy, as you were describing this. This is a foreign land for the father.
Right.
If he felt that he's not good at something, or he did not provide something that his son wanted all this time, and the father just doesn't have a place to put that.
He doesn't have a place. And he loves his son. That's clear.
Yeah.
And that's a feeling. So what? And I think I really identify with parents that feel like a fish out of water.
Yeah.
And I think once your kids are adults, you know, the other thing about adults is adult children, at least in the USA, you're not defined as a full adult till 35. That's what's happening in the research. That's the data. You know, financial independence, moving toward your own life, accepting some aloneness and existential existence outside of your folks, being able to, you know, move in that direction takes a long time. And parents don't know that.
75. Wow.
35.
And parents don't know that.
And kids don't know that. When I give them the data, kids are incredibly relieved and parents are incredibly horrified.
I'm just like, I thought we were done. Apparently not. Like, I was the beginning maybe being done.
Right. And the adult child is like, because I felt like a failure, you know? Because I can't, I had to move back home. I don't want to move back home, but I can't afford, you know. And it's a huge thing now. People in Europe and in Norway are writing me letters, because our program's in Norway. Parents seriously saying, what do I do now that my adult child is now back in my house? Do I charge rent?
Yeah.
Or not? Do I provide meals? Or not? Do you stay separate? But I don't know how to be separate.
Yeah, right.
So the dilemmas are multi-layered. You can see that, right?
Yeah, I can. Mm-hmm. So Nancy, I don't want to skip this other piece, though, this beautiful share that you just did on, like, I really wanted to know, like, how did your heart grow so big?
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest part I've known, honestly, when it comes to parents. And you're saying, thank you for sharing just so transparently with us, that it's out of your own pain in how hard being parented was, maybe, and also being a parent, like you had to forge that kind of on your own without having received those experiences. And it's just you engaging with yourself and your own path that now allows you so deeply to believe that every parent that crosses your path wants to desperately be a good parent and that we all feel inadequate. But when you, and so you just go in and connect with that part of the parent,
right.
which is profound. And so you're giving them something probably that they've never experienced, resourcing them so deeply, seeing their good intentions.
Catherine, thanks. Really explicit. Thank you so much. That was really helpful.
Yeah, you know, I think it's the rare case it makes me want to cry, of a person that doesn't want to be the best parent they know how to be. One of the moms yesterday sat in the workshop. She was young and, you know, single. I mean, didn't have a partner, had two children. She was on her own with her children. And she said, and these were her words, I had such a craving for contact physically and relationships for myself that I know I neglected my children. And now she was in her 70s and she said, what do I do with my guilt? Well, couldn't help it at the time. And then alcohol was involved. Well, luckily I haven't had those problems of addiction, but total compassion for her.
Yeah.
I mean, she feels terrible and she was caught and she didn't know how to stabilize herself. Another mother, her daughter, who was parentified, and she was, said, my mother made it really clear. The only way I'll be unconditionally loved is if I have babies. So she kept trying to have more babies. Okay.
Yeah.
And here's this daughter saying, and she was smart, and she was in college. I know that's sort of messed up, but I feel for my mom. So I try to love her as much as I can.
Yeah.
No, we can all sit, I can sit back and criticize that. This codependency, it's lopsided. We're not supposed to do it that way. Of course we're not. But that's, we're talking about real life. We're not talking about what we read in the book. And so I support the daughter in how that's been for her, but I don't feel angry at the parent. I just don't. There are certain parents. I mean, I have like getting, I can't, you know, I mean, there's certain levels of a real taking out anger on kids that I can't, you know, I can't bear.
Yeah.
But the empathy doesn't sort of really disappear, actually. It's just, you have to stop that, you know?
Have you ever, Nancy, like, had to work really hard at that in a family session? Sure. And then you're a parent?
I'm sure I have. That's sort of not where I get stuck, though.
Okay.
You know, I get stuck in different ways.
Yeah.
I do. I remember working with Paul, and actually Gail was supervising us just because this was a tough family. I love getting consultation, you know, even now. And I remember I brought Paul in because this was a hard family. Two academics in Davis, kids sort of, both of them adopted, kind of acting out. And Paul got really irritated with the mom. Really irritated with the mom. And because she kept interrupting her kids and not listening to them in the session and sort of shaming them and stuff. And he, you know, said, kind of stopped her and gave her some feedback, right? And she just was furious. So we had supervision with Gail around how Paul could try to repair that with mom.
Okay.
I wasn't irritated. I mean, I'm not a like saint or anything. I get mad at plenty of things, but that did not, I just could see the mom was desperate. She didn't know what else to do.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, you're modeling just such good stuff for us. Number one, like you're such an expert in my eyes, but you still seek out consultation. You bring in a co-therapist when need, but
definitely.
Paul got triggered and they, had to work on repairing. And you do get stuck. You just get stuck in other areas. And I suppose just starting to know where each of us gets stuck is very important.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I think that if I hadn't had all the therapy I've had and continue to have at times, if there's a particular difficult situation in the family, we've had some difficulties, all families do, I probably wouldn't be able to have self-acceptance. Because you have to know how to accept yourself or you can't accept your clients, you know? And if you have a trigger that's similar and you don't accept yourself, you're certainly not going to be able to give that to your clients.
Yeah.
It's like, you're wrong. You can't do that, right? And you can't do that if there's a behavioral abuse or anything. We have to, step in. But
yeah.
To not have a feeling about it, right?
Yeah. So, Nance, you're saying that parenting your own kids really helped you develop this empathy for yourself, and then you can transfer that to other parents. What about our listeners who aren't parents themselves?
Yeah.
What do you think about how they might do?
Well, I think the parts that, you work with young kids, Catherine, and I love you. I love what you're doing. I saw your books and stuff. I think that there's some, my downfall is maybe that I empathize too much with parents. I make a lot of room for whatever they do. If they have a hard time making boundaries, I don't go behavioral. I just get, what do you feel like if you do make a boundary? What are you afraid will happen? I try to get that just easy for me because I'm talking to myself. So,
yeah.
I think child therapists, because I was trained as a child therapist before family, sometimes they identify with the kids so much, they get pissed off at the parents. And they become the better parent.
I know. And then the parents get threatened and pull the kids out of treatment, which they should.
Right. Yeah. But it's so easy. So but I wasn't drawn to being a child therapist.
Uh-huh.
I was drawn to being a family therapist. I mean, I could, in the play therapy I did, when I was at UCD Med School and I got my training as a clinical psychologist, the kids were adorable, but that's not where I wanted to be. I wanted to see what happened at home. That was always where I wanted to go. You live with, not with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess the kids, if you don't have your own children and you really are drawn to the children, I think that's wonderful, and I think they need it desperately. They need another alternative. And you don't have, if you're not a parent, either because you couldn't be or you didn't choose to be, that's a perfectly wonderful, legitimate way to be in the world. But maybe, just like I have to make sure I put myself in the uncomfortable areas where parents really do need to be bounded and hold some lines, and the kids really need to be a lot of empathy. They may have to get some consultation if they find themselves getting really irritated with. I'm making a terrible generalization. There's been a stereotype where child therapists will contact me.
Okay.
And say, please work with the mom. She's unworkable. That's the phrase I hear.
Okay.
And that's not a phrase I like.
Yeah.
Let's look at what's going on, because every mom wants to be workable.
Mm.
That's really what I assume. But they're advocating for those kids. And I've seen them say, I mean, this has happened quite a bit where they'll say, I can't see her. She just triggers me. She's impossible. Every time I tell her, don't send that kid to the Spanish immersion class. They have a learning disability. They will feel inadequate and fail. She'll say, no, I want them to learn Spanish. All right? This is like a Davis thing because there's a high-achieving academic professors that are saying they want, right? I can't bear it. They get mad. I understand. But I also feel badly because that mom comes to see me. And this has happened a lot. And the mom says, well, they told me I was unworkable. I know they sent me to you because they think I'm unworkable. And they'll see my husband. So now my husband and the therapist are working with the kid, but they're my kid too.
Yeah.
Am I really that bad?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm answering your question. I hope I am.
No, I love it. I was fantasizing that the child therapist and the family therapist could work together. Like, and I love that you know, hey, I just tend to have more empathy for the parents or more curiosity. And
right.
There's a lot of us who are trained in play therapy who are all about the kids. And so we can all lose our balance somewhere. This, and we be aware of this. And do whatever we need to find that empathy and compassion. And that does mean going to consultation and being, hey, I'm triggered. I'm getting annoyed. Hard for me to hold this person in the scissor. Right? I think when you're holding a family system as a therapist, you have to grow such a massive amount of tolerance for the anxiety that that system holds. And that we're constantly trying to grow that ourselves.
Constantly.
And we're going to grow it when we can realize where we get triggered. I just had a parent reach out to me 2 weeks ago saying, we're going to fire you and find another therapist because there hasn't been enough change in our child. And like, it's my kryptonite. And I hate that so much. And then how do I look at that happening and say, the system is struggling and they're letting out air here. And how do I even lean in when my head's on the chopping block and hold them yet as a sign of them reaching out and saying, we need souls, Catherine, for tender love and care, but they're threatening me. You know, like how do I run through that?
I'll confess something to you where I think you made me remember my hardest pain. Parent, my hardest parent.
Yes.
This was really weird.
Okay.
And this was recent. This was recent. I saw a psychologist, mom, a senior person in the country, actually, and her daughter, who was also a therapist.
Okay.
And they wanted to come to see me to work on their relationship. And I did EFT, like I do, EFFT, and about, I don't know, 3 months in, the mom said, I don't like this approach, it's not for me.
Mm.
You interrupt me, you direct me, you don't listen to me, This isn't working for me. And I've been in analysis, and I've been in this, and I've been in that, and I actually wrote that book. Did you read the chapter? I'm serious. So this doesn't work for me. This isn't my way. And you're clearly underneath that it was like trashing what I was doing. And the daughter, who was in her mid-30s, said, I think she's great. And I think you were getting a lot. And I've watched her support you, Mom. But if you don't want to do this, it's not going to work. So it's okay. But I think she... Her eyes sort of filled up with tears and said, I feel like you're pulling the cord out, you know, when we're right in the middle of really hard things. And I'd like us to continue, but I really will support whenever you want. And I could see this was a typical thing for the daughter to kind of back away. Like, I'm not taking this on. My mom. So I had the feeling my mom has done this before, sort of, maybe not with therapy.
Yeah.
And mom said, no. If you want her, I don't want to disappoint you. Let's keep going. And I processed how they felt with each other. And at the end, she said to me, well, this was worthwhile.
Huh?
We went on for another like 8 months. doing some very hard work about their past because they had a lot of trauma to work out in things that affected their relationship. Very difficult. And then about 8 months in, she said, hey, mom said, hey, I think it's time to reevaluate, right? We're going to reevaluate. And I said, well, sure. Yeah, I probably should have said that earlier. Let's do it. And the next session, she came in and said, I'm done. I don't want to come back. And this has been the worst experience I've ever had.
Oh, my.
She actually said that.
Wow.
No, she said, of all the therapy I've been in and all the therapy I've studied, this has been the worst experience I've ever had.
How? Oh, my gosh. No.
And I said, wow. I mean, it just came out. I said, wow. Wow. And she said, I said, because I had no indication over the last 8 months that we were doing good work. And she said, well, I was biding my time, waiting for my daughter to get more of what she needed. I think we're there now. I'm not coming back. I just need you to know. She said, I don't want to hurt your feelings. She said, I said, well, I have to say, I've never been called the worst therapist that someone's ever had. But I hear you. And clearly this doesn't, what I do doesn't make work for you. It just doesn't work for you. And the daughter said, wow, mom. And we ended.
Yeah.
Now that was a hard mom to be empathetic with at that moment for me.
What made it I can only imagine, like, in terms of her stature in the same profession, all that kind of thing, but
what there was a coldness. Mm. There was a coldness.
Mm. Like, you worked for 8 months or longer, right, to reach her. And you tried everything you could.
Well, I thought we were. See, that's the part that was so confusing. It wasn't like nothing was happening.
Yeah. Oh.
But there was another part of her that was not, that I didn't have access to.
Yeah, that you didn't even know was there, maybe.
Well, I thought I had gotten worked out enough. I mean, I critiqued myself. I can see now that I could have kept checking in with mom more. How are you doing with me? How are you doing with us? I do have a bias now about this mom. I do. I think there was some sort of disturbed, dissociated part that couldn't handle my input.
Yeah.
And maybe it was harder for her that her adult child really got a lot out of it with me. There was maybe some competitiveness, but that's just my story. The point is, it was hard to understand what the who happened, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you for sharing that story. That's priceless for us to get to hear about, Nance.
It was weird, but I guess I was confident enough at 73. I figure, you know, I mean, I just go on. You know, I mean, I should have checked the alliance more. I don't want to write it off as she was unworkable. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I just want to learn more. But I can say at that moment, I felt protective of myself rather than empathetic with her. Yep. But I did what I was supposed to do. I supported her and agreed with her. I didn't argue with her. Yeah. I didn't say, don't you see what I did? You just don't do that.
When you do this work for long enough, we're all going to have a story like this, or many. The good thing is we just need to start talking about it with each other. Say, yeah, that's normal. And we get ourselves up and we keep, right?
Like you said, when you were fired, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good. Yeah. It doesn't feel good.
Does not feel good at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, go ahead.
Well, I know we're at the end of our time. I hope I gave you some things that are valuable as we talked.
Yeah. Nancy, thank you so, so much for sitting with us today. I've learned so much. I just love how transparent you are, how much you're doing the work yourself in your own life with your own family as a mom. The learning never, ever stops. You're so humble at 73. talking about going for consultation, cases where you've gotten triggered. I mean,
yeah,
this clearly are living the work, and this comes from a very deep, authentic place for you. And yeah, I just thank you so much for your compassion and the beautiful models that you've created, the Hold Me Tight for adults around the world. You're doing amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. Very supportive. Thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
And nice to meet you, Rhonda.
Yeah, nice to meet you too, Nancy. I'll just echo what Catherine said. Like, I can just, the breadth of experience and wisdom that you have. And now I more fully understand why Catherine told me she's the most empathetic therapist you're going to meet in the EFFT world. So now I really get it. And I want to grow that part of me, right, that can have even more empathy, because I know there is still room to grow. So thank you for inspiring me in my work. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Thanks, fans. Take care.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again for our next journey.